heard from George Moss a few minutes ago came from an interview conducted by David Murray in Inverness in 1986. George was an old-style Highland piper. He was born in Strathglass in 1903. He was a former pupil of Sandy Cameron's at Achnacarry. He didn't compete, but he did carry with him a huge knowledge of pibroch and its interpretation, much of which he felt was at odds with the modern style favoured on the competition circuit. Their conversation started with a tune played by John Burgess, who also joined them in the studio, the ground of the Chisholm Salute in the style of George Moss.
Well, George, that was Chisholm's Salute, the other way, if I could put it that way, with the bar line moved one way to the left. Could you give us some idea how it got the other way, a sort of poor man's Glen is mine, as it's printed in the books these days?
Well, the tune as written starts on what ought to be the second beat. It's as if a person trying to write the tune started at the wrong time, like a wheel revolving. He just began counting at the wrong time. Now, the first note is A, and that is correct in the variations, but not in the ground. Therefore, the one or the other is wrong, and it's clear that it's the Uller that's wrong. The same thing happens in Wayne from Land and in The Glen is Mine, possibly others.
John, how did you feel when you were playing the Chisholm Salute that way around?
Very comfortable. Because I found that I knew, or I thought I knew, and I think now that I know, where I was going, which makes an awful difference.
Yes, the other way, it resembles the Glen of Mine. Glen is Mine.
The Glen is Mine.
And what's the point in having two tunes like that?
Well, indeed, what is the point?
George, besides Sandy Cameron, who else influenced your thinking on pibroch?
I was related to a Fraser family of pipers. My mother's mother was a Jean Fraser. Her brother was Alec Fraser, who was taught by a Hugh Fraser, who was taught by David Fraser, who was in Borderick in 1743. Therefore, there's three men between me and McCrimmon. Now, Donald Cameron was taught by that same Hugh Fraser, and Sandy Cameron was taught by his father. Therefore, what I got from Sandy Cameron was the same as I got from my Fraser relations earlier on, and that early information about pibroch is what I retained or maintained all my life.
Now, when do you think that the style of playing pibroch changed? You must have been around when it happened, George.
Well, I would say it's between the publication of the Pibroch Society's first series of books, there were only two or three, and the present series in 1925 or thereabouts. Yeah. It was somewhere in between that.
Where would you say was the main difference between what you'd had traditionally and what the Peabody Society was putting out?
The greatest difference, the most noticeable difference, was on the Sheikh and Lowy, they had lengthening of the E grace note that did not occur in the older form at all. In the older form, the GED was grace notes and an embellishment ori only. Could have been played as an introductory note at the beginning of a phrase, but within a phrase it was just an embellishment.
John, would you like to take up the chanter and perhaps try to see if you could illustrate for us what George...
Yes, well, if I could just think of a tune here where this became very prevalent, probably in the 60s, the late 60s. In fact, people were playing so long cadential E's that it was highly believable. If we take The Old Men of the Shells, I have heard this played... That's what it sort of developed into, although I wasn't mm-hmm. taught it that way. But that was a very prevalent form of it in the 60s, and it's carried straight on through. And of course, we have it in Gaelic Rias, probably the classic example, where we get this recognised style now of doing... Well, I'm sure you were never taught that. I was certainly not taught. So on.
Yeah. Now, there's another tune that I'm interested in. It's the Blue Ribbon. And there again, we start off with the Haranen. Mm-hmm. My generation have always been taught long E, bell mm-hmm. on the A, uh-huh. and yeah. so on. John, yeah. you've been trying George's way.
Yes, I've been trying George's way and enjoying mm-hmm. it. Do very much indeed.
Well, mm-hmm. let's hear the Ground of the Blue Ribbon played in George's style. George, can you tell us some more about this echoing beat on low A, please?
Yes, in the vocal chant of Fraser Cameron version of vocal chant, the shaking low A was hee ha ra run. Now, the syllable for low E with a high G grace note was han. The vowel being rather vague. The syllable for low E preceded by low G was ran. Again, it could be run, you know, the vague vowel. But in the shaken low E, it was he ha ra run. Now, any opinion that the har and in the Campbell contract, that it the ha means a D full note, is not correct. It means low E. Therefore, he haren has a syllable missing, and that's just about all one can say about that.
George, we have possibly, what, three generations of pipers who have played the actual finger, the little finger movement, as a draw over.
Yes, yes.
Although I'm not particularly ancient as yet, I can remember as a boy, old players spring to mind, like James Ogden Duff, that was in Edinburgh at that time, who played the two taps in light music. I only heard him play that,
of course. Yes. Yes.
I think that was quite common. Indeed, my father was taught by Willie Mann to play two taps on the do. So when do you think that perhaps the business of doing, which may have been, or obviously was introduced into, when do you think that might have taken place?
That type of barrel that you describe, bending the wee finger in towards the palm of the hand, began in Strathspey playing. Some pipers couldn't get it fast enough by tapping the wee finger.
I see. So
therefore, they played it. They tried different tricks to get it fast enough, rubbing the finger down and back, up and back, tapping and drawing it back, and that sort of thing. But in Pibroch, the majority at that time, or the whole lot, played by tapping the wee finger, because it didn't need to be so fast in Pibroch. Yes. So the different ways were just efforts to get the thing fast in the first speed.
Yeah. It's of interest too that I went to Robert Reed to start with, and the first Pibroch he gave me was MacGregor's Gathering. Mm-hmm. And he taught me to play the barrels there, what he called the spread barrel, exactly as you've described to John.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only tune that he played, that he taught me. He may have taught other people other ways.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, so that makes a generation back, we've got that coming out in this one tune.
Yes, yes.
Well, George, you've devoted a lot of your life to thinking and playing Pibroch and studying it. What does it mean to you?
Well, although I was never what you might call a professional piper, except I was signed on the Cameron twice, and put out of them twice, I never went very far with bad eyesight, but I have been a student of Pibroch all my life. Pibroch is my life, always was, and will be for the rest.
The voice of the late George Moss of Keswick on the Murray Firth, a wonderful insight into piping of past times. And George was in the company there of David Murray and John Burgess.